Before we jump into today's episode, we've got a free resource you won't want to miss. It's called The Robot Race: Could AI Ever Replace Humanity? A thought-provoking ebook exploring the rise of artificial intelligence, what it means to be human, and how Christians can think biblically in this new tech age. If you've ever asked, can machines become conscious? Or does AI challenge our faith? This is for you. Download your free copy now at premierinsight.org/resources. Again, that's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast. Before we jump into today's episode, we've got a free resource you won't want to miss. It's called The Robot Race: Could AI Ever Replace Humanity? A thought-provoking ebook exploring the rise of artificial intelligence, what it means to be human, and how Christians can think biblically in this new tech age. If you've ever asked, can machines become conscious? Or does AI challenge our faith? This is for you. Download your free copy now at premierinsight.org/resources. Again, that's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
Well, hello and welcome along to Unbelievable with me, Justin Briley, bringing you a New Year's edition of the show, the first of 2017. And I do hope you've had a good first week of the new year. Unbelievable is the programme that brings Christians and non-Christians together for dialogue and debate every single week here on Premier Christian Radio as part of Faith Explored. And if you haven't listened to the show before, perhaps you might like to listen to some of the back catalogue and join the thousands of people who download the show as a podcast every week. That's at premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. There you can find further resources, articles, blogs, and of course last year's conference on DVD and CD, or available as a digital download. And excitingly, we have another Unbelievable the Conference coming in 2017. Do ring fence the date of Saturday the 13th of May. Put that in your diary now, and we'll be bringing you more details about who we're bringing over for Unbelievable the Conference this year and the exciting things we've got in store for you on Saturday the 13th of May. So I look forward to meeting hundreds of listeners of the show again this year. Right now, time to get into today's edition of the programme. You're unbelievable. Welcome along to today's edition of the programme, Unbelievable. And, we were recording, as you might be able to tell from the difference in sound quality, in a slightly different studio to normal here at Premier Towers. And it's a delight to be joined by two guests who I don't think are necessarily that familiar with the programme, but who came onto my radar because of an article that we asked one of them to write for us for Premier Christianity magazine. I'm talking today to Joe Ogborn and Thomas Hallam. Joe is a Christian and for years has attended church with his friend Tom, but Tom is actually an atheist. Why would an atheist go to church, you might ask? Well, we'll find out today, and we'll find out what impact worshipping next to an atheist in church has had on Joe as well, and what Tom makes of it all, having seen church from the inside, and what continues to stop him from believing up to this point. You can read Joe's very good article, My Friend the Atheist Churchgoer, in the January edition of Premier Christianity magazine. And it's available now at our website, premierchristianity.com. You can ask for a free sample copy there as well and get it in the flesh, in the print, as it were. That's at premierchristianity.com/free sample. So Joe and Tom, welcome along to the programme.
Thank you very much.
It's great to have you here. You guys have been friends for quite a while now, haven't you? Joe, how long does this friendship go back?
So Tom and I had a conversation a while back, and we were trying to work out when exactly we first met. And so it was while we were at university. And so it's at least, I would say, 7 years probably we've known each other.
Mm.
It feels like a long time.
I think it'll be the January or February of 2009, is my guess.
Was when
we first started chatting.
And you've been a Christian most of your life, Joe?
Yeah, brought up in a Christian home. So while I've had my own journey to my own faith, definitely I've been surrounded by the church and the Christianity and Jesus ever since I can really remember.
And that continued through university days?
Continued through university days. I went through definitely periods of probably quite extreme doubt and really trying to wrestle with the questions I felt I needed to wrestle with. And it was actually during that point that I met Tom and we got talking about faith and all the big questions of life. And so definitely, but having gone through university and now as a person in the working world. Definitely I would call myself a Christian and very much actively involved in my church.
I mean, these shows are quite often full-on debates. I'm anticipating more of a conversation today because you guys are friends and you've kind of probably debated this stuff till the cows come home already.
We've had small chats of 3-4 hours long before.
Well, what we're aiming to do really on today's show is meet you both and just find out a bit about what the experience is like for you, Tom, being in a church, why you would do that in the first place and that kind of thing. But for your background, had you ever kind of gone to church before you met Joe?
So I come from a non-religious household. Neither of my parents, as far as I'm aware, have ever been believing Christians. My dad's family, not Christians. I think my mum's father was a Christian. But we never went to church as a family.
Really registered on your sort of radar.
Well, so my primary school used to have a vicar come in every week or so. And he would sort of tell us sort of stories from the Bible suitable for primary school kids. And every Christmas we'd, as a school, troop down to the local church and have a carol concert there. I actually played Jesus in an Easter production for the primary school.
This was not the Nativity, I assume. This was
this was the Trials and Passion.
I played Joseph in my nativity play at school.
Good role.
I was Joseph as well.
Oh, were you? Yeah. Well, I had the unusual honour of actually riding the donkey into Bethlehem.
That's impressive.
Because Mary was too scared to go on it. So
you had an actual donkey?
Yeah. Our headmaster was really into the nativity play. So, I got to ride on a real-life donkey into Bethlehem. Anyway, that's an aside. So you kind of arrived at university and met Joe, obviously.
Yeah.
What was the context and how did you start to kind of decide to end up going to church together?
So we didn't actually go to church together at university.
Okay.
I did start going to university at church. I got to know some Christians from my college before I met Joe and sort of hung out at various times with them. And we ended up living in the same housing unit. And it was them who sort of initially asked, well, I think probably my second year, whether I wanted to come along, because we'd had various conversations about faith and the Bible and stuff. And it was they who invited me. It was St. Ebbs, Oxford.
Okay. Well, I went to Oxford, so I know St. Ebbs. Ah. But I used to go to St. Aldate's, so that's the difference.
So I started going there probably in the second year, and I just sort of kept going on and off throughout that time. I think I went to Joe's church once or twice.
Yeah.
I think it was through them that I heard about Catholic theology, which is really where me and Joe started to discuss things of faith.
This was a kind of informal discussion group where people, both believing and non-believing, got together for having chats.
How did that start, Joe? Because you were there before I
like to accept some responsibility for starting up, I think. At the time, it was with Sally Hitchener. She was with our chaplain. And we recognised there's probably some need for just a space where people could talk about things of faith and things of non-faith, an environment which wasn't always basically a debate format. So the general idea was, if you can meet in a coffee shop and have coffee together, you can probably get along. And through that, the group is always fairly small, but we talked about all things, and through that we got to know each other.
So the friendship continued after university, because you both were able to actually move to the same place.
Yep.
Where you now live, Cambridge.
Yeah, purely by coincidence. Joe and his family had moved there just before university had finished, I think.
That's correct, yeah.
And I was looking for jobs after university, and the one I happened to get happened to be in Cambridge. So it was a really nice coincidence.
Great. So you guys invited Tom to come along to church, Joe?
Yes. I guess I can thank my wife more for that than me. So I knew, obviously, Tom and I were still friends. We talked about these things, but for some reason, it didn't really cross my mind, let's invite Tom to church. But my wife, who's perhaps more bolder than I am, said, Tom, come along to church. And Tom said yes. So that was the beginning of a very long 45-year journey now.
That's probably like early 2012, I think that was.
Yeah.
Now, there's many things you could be doing with your Sunday morning, Tom.
Having a lie-in,
a nice brunch, maybe, I don't know, any other number of pursuits available on a Sunday morning. What makes you get up and go to church with Joe and his wife?
So the reasons have sort of differed over the time that I've been going. I think More recently, it's been the people. So having been going for so long, I've got to know there are various people there, and it's really nice to see them on a Sunday morning. I think there'd be fewer opportunities to see them if I weren't going. I think I still find the sermons interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy listening to them, and I sort of make notes, and often they provide points which me and Joe can talk about afterwards. But yeah, I think primarily now it's the community.
Yeah,
but I don't think it's always been that.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I'm sure you'd agree, Joe, for many Christians, you know, certainly part of the attraction of churches is the fellowship, to use the Christianese.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, the but getting together, it's the community aspect of it that makes a huge difference in many people's lives.
Yeah, very much so. And I think that's where, I think that's been great for both of us, is actually, you know, we belong to the church community, although we both have different, obviously different perspectives. There's still that sense of, actually, there's family and people know Tom, and mm-hmm. That's been really nice. You know, Tom hasn't, at least I don't, from my perspective, Tom hasn't felt like he's just on the fringe of
right.
this church.
Our lead elder has affectionately dubbed me their resident atheist.
Resident atheist. Oh, well, it's obviously a title that stuck. But the I love this idea, though, that you're obviously a very open-minded kind of person, willing to come along and, as it were, be part of that community, though obviously not being able to believe the same things mm-hmm. as pretty much almost everyone, I guess, who goes there on a Sunday morning would believe. I mean, what's it like just being in that environment where, and I'm guessing it's a quite a lively kind of church, Joe,
yeah,
you know,
you probably call it evangelical charismatic,
yeah, and there's going to be people, you know, raising their hands in the air and sometimes really in the moment,
sometimes we have people dancing in the aisles.
Yeah. Okay, when you kind of first encountered that, did you find that bizarre? What were your reactions to it?
I think I was sort of aware that such things happen in churches.
Such things.
So I wasn't entirely caught off guard.
Right.
And having a sort of gone very much of my own sort of volition, I was sort of prepared to be like accepting and polite yeah. of what was going on. So I think I can't remember whether I found it sort of unusual to begin with, but now you don't think
about it anymore.
No, it's right. just it. Yeah, of yeah. course, it's happening.
Yeah, yeah.
I think from the worship aspect, it's like during the songs and things, it's just there in the background. Mm. I think I pay more attention to when there's various points during the songs when sort of the band will go quiet and someone will come forward with some either the reading from the Bible, or they'll come and say that they've. Felt like they've had a word from God, or sometimes we'll have someone who does like a sung prayer, just them. And sometimes I find those more unusual, particularly when sort of thinking about the content that they're talking about.
And how are you processing all this? I mean, are you singing along even, or do you tend to just sort of remain silent and just sort of watch what's going on?
That's actually changed. When I was at Sir Ebbs in Oxford, I sang most of the time. And I never really found that to be an issue. I didn't believe most of the things that I was saying in it, but that wasn't a big deal for me. But actually, as time went on, when I came to City Church, it became more of an issue that I wasn't enjoying singing the songs, that I wasn't liking saying things which I didn't believe.
Didn't find you could really, yeah.
Yeah, and I went through a long period of not singing.
It may, I suppose, somewhat depend on the nature of the song. I mean, I know, for instance, you can sort of would see this as well, Joe. There are some churches which tend to use songs which are more kind of declaring things about God or Jesus or the Bible. And whereas another form of worship song is one which is very intimate, I love you, Jesus. This, you know,
absolutely.
It's all about your personal engagement. And I can imagine that kind of song is even harder, if you like, for the atheist to sing, because obviously it'd be very hard to justify that.
Indeed. I'm just trying to think of what the nature of the songs tends to be. I think they tend to be more declaring the attributes of God. There are definitely some which talk about relationship with one's own relationship with God and declaring that. But I think actually the ones that I have most trouble with are the ones that are saying God is like this, God does that.
Yeah.
How does it feel for you as someone who is, you know, obviously wanting to be involved in that worship, wanting to express your worship to God? with Joe sat next to you or standing next
with
to you.
With Tom.
Tom.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, my Toms and my Joes confused. But with Tom standing next to you.
Definitely, that's been a big process of change for me. Mm. I definitely, when I first moved to Cambridge, I think I definitely still believed and still wanted to worship God, but I was definitely struggling at that point with my faith. And so church, in a sense, felt like a safe space where I could go and didn't have to maybe live for a little while engage with all the questions.
Yeah.
And maybe that was why I had hesitancy to invite Tom along in the first place.
Right, because that was like inviting the
the
doubting, skeptical outside of you straight to sit next to you in church.
So when my wife invited Tom along and Tom came, it was obviously I was kind of split, basically. Mm. It was part of me that was delighted, and another part which thought, now I have this guy sitting next to me.
This is going to stress me out a bit.
Yeah. But I actually think that's been very healthy for me. So I think as I've gone on in life, and I think my faith is much stronger, and now when I come to worship, it is, in a sense, I've had to push through and think, what am I confident of, and and who am I worshiping? Mm. So in a sense, I could argue my faith is, or my worship now feels more, perhaps more genuine, because it's on some level, not in defiance of, but I know I've had to mentally process worshiping alongside someone who doesn't believe, who I'm very good friends with, but quite frankly, thinks I'm wrong. And, you know, as much as he can be polite about it, there's no easy way to get past that I'm possibly deluded.
I've got so
many... wouldn't necessarily say that. I think he's probably too polite.
It wouldn't be the word I would choose.
No.
I've got so many questions. I don't know where to begin with all these questions in my head at the moment. But maybe take us back a little bit to this time of doubt you had gone through at university, Joe. So where did that come from? And in a sense, what role did talking to Tom kind of have in you sort of working through all of these doubts you were having?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. I think a key thing for me was the end of my first year. So my first year at university was, I think, a year in which I felt I was king of doctrine. I knew everything. And everyone
else describe it in the article as you had your faith was an ironclad fortress.
Yeah,
I think.
And now I work with students at my church. I actually see a similar. It's quite fun. I meet new students and go, "Oh, there's Joe in first year," and so I was very, very confident. And then I think that confidence was built on basically some denial of some questions I was having.
Okay.
So it felt easier to just become more black and white rather than engage with that. At the end of my first year, that came. Felt like he just came crumbling down. I don't know quite what sparked it off. Sometimes these things happen, and suddenly I had to felt like I was unpackaging everything and starting afresh. And I guess it was interesting to be able to chat with someone who you knew wasn't trying to persuade you it was right, as much as that was sometimes good to have for my Christian friends. Equally, I felt probably a freedom to say things that, you know, now were probably slightly blasphemous, might be the wrong word, but were quite just going to put it out there, more like the Psalms perhaps.
Yeah.
And say exactly how I was feeling.
Yeah.
And I knew not everyone around me who are Christians probably would want to have to cope with that.
Right. But you felt Tom could in that
sense. In a very weird way.
Yeah. I mean,
I wasn't going to give you any easy answers.
No.
I mean, the way you put it in the article, I really love the article, by the way, that you've written for us, Joe. From the earliest days at university, Tom has seen the insides of my faith. He has seen the moments of conviction and certainty, along with days of paralyzing doubt before leading worship in our church. Strangely, there was something oddly comforting about speaking to an atheist in those times. He understood my doubt more readily than some Christians. I mean, where do you kind of, when you've seen Joe talk about his doubts, what's been your response to that, Tom?
He looks so sad. No, seriously, like, when he talks about it, he's clearly struggling with it. He's clearly not. Particularly when it's like in the deeper moments, when it's not just sort of like, oh, hi, opening conversation, move on to what we're doing in the day. When he's, when we're really talking about it, he's, clearly struggling with what he's saying. So I might be thinking about certain things or arguments, but I don't want to push him further if it's going to.
I mean, I think it's incredibly. It's great that you've got the kind of friendship where that happens, because I think there is a kind of a sense in which we can get into a mindset of, if I'm a Christian and they're an atheist, or they're an atheist, I'm a Christian, I have to kind of present a unified front, that I'm really rock solid and certain about everything I believe, because otherwise it'll make you know, we're not winning the argument or something. And obviously, for you, presumably, Sean, that's not an issue, you know.
No.
Seeing that Joe kind of doesn't necessarily always have it all together.
Yeah, I think it was an attitude I had started trying to consciously move towards early in university. I think my mother had been concerned when I was at secondary school about how I would discuss things with people in a very matter-of-fact and blunt way, and perhaps not a very sensitive way to either them or the rest of the social situation. Mm. And so she encouraged me to value things more than just being right.
Right.
And I think, so I try to make sure when I was talking to people, and I actually would ask them afterwards, you know, how did you feel talking to me? Did you feel I was being aggressive or trying to push you or just trying to like catch you out? And I was trying to have more of a conversation, more of an understanding of what they were doing rather than
a kind of empathetic kind of viewpoint rather than just a sort of getting in there to kind of put your next debate point forward.
I mean, it wasn't purely a information gathering exercise. Mm. I was also trying to argue certain points. Mm. But if they were clearly getting uncomfortable with some area or they weren't happy with it, then we'd stop. Mm, yeah. And that's fine.
I think about what I found in our discussions is that the same, I guess, empathy you share with me is equally Tom will have times where he'll share stuff in my, you know, what's going on in his life, and I might think Jesus is the answer. Probably not quite that simplistically, but I can see how I think my faith, and if he followed Jesus, that would make a big difference. But equally, sometimes you need to step back and deal with him as a listening to him first rather than immediately going to, or Jesus must, let me tell you about Jesus, even though we've had many of these conversations. So I think we've both learned that although we both obviously hold our opinions strongly and have convictions, that actually the friendship is deeply important to that.
I mean, what I like about your article, coming back to that, Joe, is that it's, in a way, it's more about you and the way you kind of processed having Tom in church than Tom's experience of being in church. But because you talk about, you know, a period when, you know, you say there's something highly disconcerting as you raise your hands in worship to God when you know the person to your left can only think your zeal is misplaced, if not delusional. It was difficult at the best of times to share what I believed God might be saying from the front of the church, let alone in front of Tom. He must think I'm hearing voices, I thought to myself. And you talked about going through a period where you kind of had to start analysing everything that was going on at the front. Yeah. You know, how is this being received by Tom? Does this make sense? Is this rational? And so on. Finding yourself eventually in some turmoil. But eventually coming to a place of peace
over
a few years. So tell us about that journey, because you obviously kind of struggled for a bit with this and until finally you've felt actually okay.
Yeah, I think I'm still trying to work out exactly what changed. Mm-hmm. And I think the only answer I can give is actually one which I think is, I don't want to say miraculous might be the wrong word, but I felt like what happened, cynicism became a default position. Mm. So I think there was a sense in which it wasn't just, where does the evidence point? Is this right, correct? But I found myself being quite basically arrogant in the sense of whenever someone spoke, I immediately said, well, I know better. And I found that in myself. And I thought, well, I don't think that is either the right response. I think you can be someone who deals with evidence and discusses things without basically having to put other people down in order to do that.
Yeah.
And so I found myself that was happening. And it was only really at a church conference with some of the leaders when I very distinctly remember someone praying for me for this thing. And I can only argue that somehow something changed inside. I still have, I think, the same questions. I still listen to things sometimes on a Sunday and think, how can I buy into that? Can I not buy into that? But there is, maybe there's a sense more of grace towards others that actually I haven't, while I hold my convictions equally, I'm not the person with all the knowledge in the world. And
I mean, I don't have the same experience of worshipping with an atheist next to me every Sunday, but I...
You do.
yeah, it's true. But having obviously interacted with many atheists, and the many people who are atheists I call my friends over the years, I think Christians have... can say thanks for the atheists in their lives, because for me it's certainly been something where it's made me think more, okay, does this make sense? Is this a rational, you know, could I rationally hold this belief up to scrutiny? Am I being too credulous of when someone comes up and says, this happened to me or that happened to me. And I think actually there's a real value for Christians in actually having a sort of skeptical filter almost to some of the things, because I think it can swing too far in that direction. I mean, do you want to comment on that, Tom? Do you think that, I mean, and how far kind of are you kind of when people are up on the stage telling about the way God's worked in their life, or the pastor is sharing the sermon, how much are you kind of thinking, okay, I'm running that through my logic filter. Is any of this kind of making sense?
I think I do that quite a lot in my head. I think with some of the times when people talk about miraculous things that happened in their lives, I sort of think about to what extent those things could be coincidental.
Yeah.
Lots of the stuff does seem from face value pretty miraculous. But there are other things that make me not believe, I think. But what's happened more recently with those miraculous things is when I hear people declaring how good God is, or how he's so generous, the gifts he gives us, how he loves us, my mind automatically goes to, well, what about this?
What about the bad stuff? Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, to be honest, I think many Christians' minds do as well. I don't think that's purely an atheistic thing to think, how do I square this against all the evil stuff in the world that God doesn't seem to be answering people's prayers about? But for you, obviously, that's the immediate sort of...
Sometimes I find it... Sometimes it can be a sort of a little jarring in that at one point in the sermon, they'll talk about some negative thing that's happened either in the news or sort of personally in the church. And then later on, there'll be a discussion of how much we can trust God. I'm like, but that thing that you were just talking about, that doesn't seem to go for me.
We'll come back to this, I think, because I think this is an interesting area to maybe dig into a little bit more in the second part of our programme today. This is Unbelievable, the show that brings Christians and non-Christians together. We've never done one quite like this, though, because my two guests today are very good friends. They are Tom Hallam and Joe Ogborn. And Joe is the author of a recent article for Premier Christianity magazine. You can find it in the January edition. It's called My Friend, the Atheist Churchgoer, because that's what Tom is. So if you want to read it for yourself, go to premierchristianity.com. That's the website. And you can ask for a free sample copy of the magazine as well if you're not a subscriber. premierchristianity.com/free sample. Look forward to hearing what you have to say about our discussion today and the conversation we're having. Do email in unbelievable@premier.org.uk. I'll give out the other ways to get in touch in a moment's time in the second part of this week's Unbelievable.
Premier Christianity, for cutting-edge commentary and encouraging stories.
Tackling the big issues to help you live out your faith.
Have you heard the one about the three comedians who walked into a church? In our New Year edition, meet Milton Jones, Sally Phillips and Paul Carenza as they have a conversation on putting together their faith with careers in TV and radio comedy. Plus, we talk to the Reverend Richard Coles, former 80s pop star, now one of the UK's most famous vicars. Sam Hales attends a New Age fair and tells you what happened. All that plus much more.
For your free copy of Premier Christianity, visit premierchristianity.com/freesample.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
Well, today on the programme, we're talking about My Friend, the Atheist Churchgoer. Joe Ogborn and Thomas Hallam join me. I'm enjoying this conversation between my two guests today. Every week here on Unbelievable, we bring people of different points of view together for a good old natter debate. Today, very much a conversation because these two are good friends, and Tom has been attending Joe's church in Cambridge for a number of years. Why would he, though, as an atheist? Well, he's been talking about the things he does get out of going to church in the first part of today's programme, but also some of the issues he has, obviously, being a non-believer in church each Sunday, and how Joe's dealt with that as well in terms of his own faith journey. Again, if you want to get in touch with today's programme, do welcome your emails, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. okay. Perhaps you've had a spell as a non-believer in a church, or perhaps you are a Christian who has had this experience Joe's had of worshipping next to a non-Christian. Be interested to hear from you. You can also, of course, find us online on Twitter and Facebook. At UnbelievableJB is the Twitter handle if you want to get in touch that way. Find us on Facebook at The Unbelievable Show, and you can find the links from today's programme as well on the website. That's premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. Lots of other past shows there, the podcast and much more besides. Returning to this article you've written for us, Joe, which is called My Friend, the Atheist Churchgoer, available at the Premier Christianity Magazine website. You do talk a little bit about, you know, the fact that obviously having attended for so long, Tom hasn't become a Christian.
Absolutely.
Now, I'm guessing you would like him to become a Christian, right?
Yeah, I definitely find it hard to call myself a Christian and not think that this good news is worth sharing.
Sure.
And I definitely, on some days, it's a very personal thing that I have to wrestle with. I wrestle that, you know, pray about that with God.
Do you ever feel like you're a kind of a bit of a project? I think, because there can be a danger, can't there, of feeling like, okay, everyone basically wants me to become a Christian here.
Pleasantly, I haven't... through the number of Christians that I've met, I've never felt sort of a particular project. There is a particular lady at our church at the moment who likes to check in on me and likes to encourage me slightly more pressingly than the others. But we get on very well, and it's like, yeah, it's not a problem at all.
Okay. I mean, in the article you write here, Joe, people often share how they came to be a Christian before they're baptized at our church. It's not uncommon that an Alpha course or something similar was pivotal in their journey. Sometimes someone simply felt a sense of emptiness and asked Jesus into their heart. It's hard for me to observe Tom at these moments. Tom has done the Alpha course and exploring Christianity. He reads the Bible. He started a theology degree. I know Tom has prayed the doubter's prayer. If you're real, and for whatever reason, I just can't believe, help me believe, reveal yourself. And nothing seems to happen. I've seen Tom's frustration as people talk about their decision to follow Jesus. They make believing sound so easy. So I'm getting the sense from what Joe's written there, Tom, you've really tried. You've really, you know, you've said, if it's true, I want to know it's true. I want to,
yeah,
know. And
I feel I've tried.
Okay. And just describe what that's like. I mean, have you sort of, you've kind of done everything you think was within your power to say, God, if you're there, I'm open to hearing from you.
Yeah, I think so. Just sort of thinking about sort of what I've been up to for the past few years, you hear people who say they, you know, were, that there's some experience in their life that sort of calls them, I haven't really had that. They say that, you know, they just went to church one day and sat in the back and they felt God's presence. I haven't really had that. I've been hanging out waiting for that for a good number of years now. Sometimes they say, you know, it was after, you know, they had these lingering questions, and it was only after they went to the Alpha course that that they really sort of like were felt able to commit, or they felt something that happened there. Well, I didn't feel like I had that at the Alpha course. I, through various points, felt more or less attracted to wanting to believe, and I think there have been some points when I did want to believe, but didn't. And I prayed in church, I prayed at home alone, I prayed with other people in church.
With me, yeah.
With you. I've had plenty of people who've prayed with me, for me.
You've had a lot of prayer, basically.
Yeah, yeah. I remember I was at a barbecue, and there was this guy, and, you know, I was sort of expressed some of the frustrations, and he was just saying, you know, all you need to do is, you know, ask Jesus into your heart. And I was furious.
Right.
I was just like, how can you say that to me? I have done that.
Right.
You don't know
sure
anything about my journey. And yet you say, all you have to do.
Or make some assumption that you're in some way, there's really a deep down sort of rebellion against God that you're just not admitting to.
There was one prayer that Joe was there for that I explicitly said, take away whatever it is that's rebelling. You know, if it's true, and I'm just not getting the rational reasons for it, then, you know, I wouldn't mind not being rational anymore, as it were.
Right.
You know, if it were true, right, and I just couldn't see the reason, then that wouldn't necessarily be a problem. So take away that problem.
Right.
Like, make that not a problem. it's still a problem.
Okay. Where do you... I mean, this must kind of really tear you up inside sometimes, Joe, because it's like Tom is ready and willing, and yeah, if it's true,
yeah,
please.
I mean, it definitely is it difficult? Yes, absolutely. Mm. There's no doubt about that, and I think it does turn on your head, perhaps, how you think people become Christians.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
especially when you see people who, I guess, faith just sort of comes naturally,
yeah,
to them. It comes easily, you know, and they don't have to sit through 15 gospel messages. It's like something really small turns
yeah.
them on.
And I honestly, to even try and give an answer, I think would be foolish. Mm. I mean, clearly it hasn't fitted the mold that I thought it would fit. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, as I mentioned in my article, there's a deep sense in which it's obviously quite odd now saying it to Tom face to face. There's a deep sense in which I think God is doing something.
Okay.
And I guess that is that place of thinking, I have to sit and wait and pray, and that is my part to play. But by all means, it's difficult. And I think it's difficult when you empathise with someone so deeply, to see them struggle and not have the very thing that you love to be able to share with them for the reasons that you can't quite explain.
But you haven't given up on Tom becoming a Christian?
No, not at all.
But what, you just don't know quite what it is that would take him there at this point. And I guess Tom doesn't know either.
Indeed.
Whatever it is, not. I don't think it's going to be argument. I think we can probably assume that
you've reached the end of that particular...
Well, we still love it, but definitely I think we recognise that for us, the things that we find, the thing that Tom finds perhaps insurmountable to faith, I don't find insurmountable,
okay,
but things that I might find insurmountable to atheism, he is happy to live with. It's almost the things we hold dear.
You've come to just appreciate, you just have a different perspective on these issues, and you're not going to somehow argue each other around necessarily, even if you do continue to argue about it.
It seems unlikely at this stage.
Well, I mean, what is the insurmountable object then? That
so I think there's a couple of things. The main one is the trying to understand how God's goodness and justice, how that works, what does it mean to say that God is good?
Mm.
Because lots of the images that are described of God are of being sort of like a loving father, saying he loves us, but these awful things happen to us.
Mm.
We know that he can do something, or at least that's what we're told, but he doesn't. Even though he loves us, and I don't know any father who would love their children as much as God has said to love their children, who would allow these horrible things to happen. I've sort of talked to people about it, and they've sort of part of it has been sort of, you know, what does it mean to be good? You know, am I using my own ideas of what goodness is and using that against God, and is that a sensible thing to be doing? And that may or may not be so, but I think it's not a goodness and a lovingness that I recognize.
Right.
It's
a classic question, obviously. Mm-hmm. The problem of evil, problem of suffering, and you're by no means the last or first atheist or Christian even to ask it. I mean, how do you reconcile this? Give us a quick, you know, how you would reconcile this problem that goes back millennia.
I guess for me, I'm a Christian because of Jesus. I know that sounds slightly obvious perhaps, but I think I've had to, because I've had all these questions, for me it has come down to, will I follow Jesus? And I think definitely... the resurrection, as Paul says, you know, if there is no resurrection, we are to be pitied. Mm-hmm. So for me, at least, I've tried to create a faith which is basically pivotal on, if there's a resurrection, I can follow, even if I'm not fully convinced of other rational arguments.
And even if suffering remains a mystery at some level.
Yeah, and I think that's what Tom and I have realised is, in a sense, the problem of evil isn't the killer blow, not because I don't care about it, but because there's something else that I'm perhaps more convinced by, or find more compelling as a reason for faith, and that's been useful for us to recognise.
My experience of talking to Christians about it is, we'll get to a certain point in the conversation, will sort of start sort of a very broad, abstract philosophical strokes.
Yes.
And at some point in the conversation, it will come back to Jesus.
Yeah.
And initially, I sort of got frustrated with that because it felt like the point of the argument where they sort of weren't offering reasons anymore.
Right.
But I think what it is and what I sort of see it as now is it's sort of recognizing that in any set of beliefs, we don't have all the answers.
Mm.
Scientists wouldn't say that they have all the answers. That's why they keep studying stuff.
Yeah.
But they have enough evidence and confidence in certain aspects of it.
Yeah.
Such that if they don't understand that bit, they're not going to throw the whole lot out.
Yeah.
And I think I found that Christians would come back to Jesus' death on the cross, his sacrifice, and the resurrection as a reason to believe despite not understanding that aspect.
I can very much sympathise with that because I think we all do that sort of balancing act of saying, okay, there is stuff that's hard to explain and does speak against the idea of God, but does it outweigh all this other experience I have, which seems to me, and sometimes when I've approached the question, and I there are arguments I think that Christians can make. I'm sure you've heard them all, Tom. You know, about why God may allow suffering and what purposes there may be in it, and so on. But
I've written a thesis on it.
Well, there you go.
At university,
okay. you've done the whole thing. I guess for me, part of it for me is when I come to that question is, getting rid of God doesn't solve the problems that we still have to live in a world of suffering. And even though this isn't an answer to why God would allow suffering, there's a sense in which it becomes just a brute, awful fact of existence, which has there is no resolution to in a world without God. So that even though I don't fully understand why God would allow the suffering that does occur in the world, I have a hope and a faith in a day when every tear will be wiped away and so on. And that, if you like, a day of justice for everyone who ever did suffer.
Mm-hmm.
And that will be kind of, that for me is a hope, and I'm sure many atheists would call it pie in the sky hope, but one which makes sense of the world in a way that there simply being no rhyme or reason to the things we go through in life. And I guess for me, that is partly what faith is. It's a trust that there is going to be an ultimate reason, an ultimate sort of sense, an ultimate kind of purpose to these things. Sorry, that's me stepping in with my two pennies worth there. But what I mean, have you kind of come to any kind of philosophical kind of place where you're satisfied that, or do you just live in the tension of not really knowing why things happen, Joe?
Oh, without going into all sorts of things, definitely, I think I probably have philosophically come to a place, or I can seek to rationalize it to myself. That's probably the best thing I can do, whether those reasons will convince someone else. And I think even, you know, I can look at Jesus and see, well, it shows is that God's not indifferent towards suffering. I can take that as whatever the reason is, God's not indifferent, which I know is something Tim Keller has talked about. But I can equally see how Tom will go, seems like you've already decided your mind, now you're looking for reasons to justify it. And so there is, I guess, on both sides, you've got this issue, or you've got this big question, and I guess I'm still seeking understanding.
Yeah. If that issue were to somehow get resolved for you, Tom, would that kind of be enough to say, okay, I think I can believe? Or I'm guessing it's not quite as simple as, okay, remove that barrier to belief and the path is clear.
So there's a couple of other things. One is the... So there are a number of things that... seen as right and wrong because God says that they are. One of the main things for me would be gay relationships.
Okay.
My opinion of what the Bible's position is that it's certainly not pro-gay relationships. You may argue that from silence and from other principles, you know, it might be okay, but there's nothing positive like saying, gay relationships are cool. Mm. And the majority opinion as my understanding is that, as of City Church, is that that is not what God's plan is, and therefore that gay relationships are not okay. From a philosophical point of view, sort of going through the number of sort of standard reasons why something might be wrong, does it hurt people? What problems does it cause? Just sort of like thinking about it from different aspects, you know, the sort of a natural argument, go through all those, really, the as far as I'm concerned, it's obvious from that, purely from that point of view, it gay relationships, there's nothing, there's no problem at all. And yet, God says that there is.
Mm.
That seems really strange to me. Mm. This, what, either, why would God decide to prohibit something that was okay, that wasn't hurting people, that was, that people, that gave people a lot of meaning in their lives, and was very central to them? Or how could morality work such that some being's declaration on the matter would make it wrong? Mm. So that's another problem. Yeah. How does God interact with morality?
Yeah.
That's just one issue. That's the thing that I don't understand either, and would therefore struggle with.
Yeah. Is this something you've debated together again, Joe?
Yes. Yeah. I say that with a mocking sigh. It's something that actually is very dear to my heart, and actually something I've had to spend probably more hours than on most other things. I had to think through and talk and read and carry on reading. Absolutely. And it's obviously something that we talk about, continue to talk about. And it's interesting, actually, our church recently did a talk which kind of outlined, I guess, a traditional Christian ethic on sexuality. But I think it was, Tom, you were saying it's one of the...
Yeah, I thought it was a very loving representation in that it wasn't just trying to... It didn't declare all gay people to be paedophiles didn't compare them to bestiality.
Mm.
It recognised that it was more than just sex. I thought that the way it was presented was they understood what it meant to people, but their considered opinion of the Bible's view is that that's not what God's plan is.
Because I think there can be caricatures in both directions. So an atheist can caricature Christians as... you know, being bigoted, horrible, you know, people, when that's not my experience of most Christians when it comes to, even if they hold a traditional view on sexuality. Equally, there are some Christians who can think that, you know, all gay people are just out to basically sleep with as many people as possible and all those other sort of things. So
they keep talking about an agenda. I'm not really sure where this thing is published.
Right. The agenda. I think, those are all obviously issues we often deal with on this show, and obviously Christians come down on different points of view on those as well. I guess with all of these questions that you have then about the Bible and views on sexuality, suffering and so on, again, I suppose I'm wondering, are those kind of things that stop you believing, or is it more that you could believe, you know, if God gave, I don't know, granted you miraculously the gift of believing in him, and you just have to work those things out as you went along.
So I think it's interesting. So there's another sort of big issue that... So there's working out whether or not God exists at all.
Sure.
Whether there is a powerful being. Mm. And then there's working out whether this powerful being is the sort of being that you would want to worship and give your life to.
Mm.
And I think for me, even if I thought that there was a big powerful being, there's a reason to sort of hold back on that front.
Mm.
And I think it's sort of, it partly goes back to the problem of evil. It's sort of, it's trust, the idea of trust. Lots of times it comes up in church to say, you know, we have to trust God to provide or, yeah, et cetera. And seeing what things happen in the world, I'm not sure that I could trust God. I'm not even sure what I'm supposed to be trusting him to do.
Sure,
it's not to necessarily feed me, because people are not fed. It's not to keep me well or my family, because there are people who are ill.
There's no guarantees in that sense.
So what am I trusting him for?
What's your answer? I'm going to toss this one over to you, Joe.
What's my considered answer? What am I trusting God for? I think ultimately any form of Christianity without an ultimate hope, that isn't, I would say, Christianity, in the sense that actually without a true belief in the ultimate reconciliation of creation and God and the restoration of right relationships and heaven and earth coming together. Without that hope, I think obviously that question stands, what am I trusting God for? So an obvious thing I trust God for is his promise that actually there is a time of reckoning and that Christ will come again and there will be an afterlife where he does what he promises to do. I guess perhaps a bigger question might be, can God be trusted to do that? And I would say, yes, given my understanding of God and scripture. But yeah, I think what's interesting is having sat with Tom, both literally and metaphorically, through lots of things that you might hear in church. It does those kind of things where people say, well, just trust God. There's a really important question, which is, well, trust God to do what? And perhaps sometimes Christians can be unclear as what we're exactly trusting God to. And the worst thing that could happen is to get someone to believe in a God that doesn't exist or promises stuff that he has never promised.
Yeah. And so in terms of where you've come to on that, when you speak of trusting God, and if it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to always be safe and well and happy in your life, what does it mean to say that you still trust God, even though none of that is a guarantee for a Christian as much as a non-Christian?
Profound question right there. It's interesting. I guess I don't have a particularly human-centric view of perhaps faith. By that, I don't know if that's actually a proper term. But what I mean by that is that I have come to a place, perhaps like with Job, where Job says, you know, if he flays me, still I will praise him, whatever that. Yeah. And I think that's quite a... For some reason, I don't know how I've come to that place, but perhaps I have no issue with brute authority. I don't know if that's the right way to say about it, but actually I see my place very much as a creature. Mm. And I've had to go through that process. So in a sense, what do I expect of God is a very interesting question. Mm. And maybe it's... I think you could do a whole other podcast on that,
yeah,
couldn't you?
Yeah.
I trust him to forgive me. Mm-hmm. I trust him to sanctify me and to make me more like Christ. And those are two things that I actually desire. So of that, I can be confident. Yeah. I don't think... My personal desire is not to be well.
Yeah.
Or to... I don't particularly desire that. And maybe that's an interesting thing that we haven't talked about.
I guess my thing that it made me think of is that there are many Christians in parts of the world going through horrendous difficulties, and yet their faith sustains them, even though you couldn't say that God is protecting them in a sense from difficulty and hardship and famine and sword and everything. But I guess for me, it goes to the fact that St. Paul himself said, can any of these things separate us from God, you know, from the love of God? No, nothing in all creation, under earth, over the earth, famine, death, shipwrecks, whatever. And so for me, I guess I always come back to it as that means the thing that the thing that can't be taken away is Jesus, is his love, is that thing. And that may be, for someone who hasn't, I guess, experienced that, is something that is hard to put into an argument in that sense, as a kind of this is why that trust makes sense in the end. But even though on a kind of rationalistic level, no, it doesn't guarantee you in any sense to be free from all the things that the world tends to throw at you. But
I've been thinking sort of more recently too about so there's these worldly aspects of sort of trust, and there's certainly Christians who would say, you know, there's no guarantee of that, but we're trusting in, as Joe said, sort of forgiveness and sanctification. I would think about, you know, do I think that's something to want?
Yeah, yeah, sure.
And in terms of forgiveness, that would be good for me to be forgiven if that is something that I need. Mm. That it's obviously will be useful. Mm. But I'm not sure whether I like that version of justice. If there's someone who's done something particularly terrible in life, maybe against someone that I care about, to know that they're not going to pay for what they did. Mm. Someone else is going to pay, Jesus.
Right.
I sort of don't care that someone else is going to pay. Mm. Or I know that the person who did this to me and my family isn't going to be paying. I don't care that someone else is. What happens there?
Right.
So in some sense, I don't feel that's a very good deal.
Okay. That's an interesting point of view. Do you have a comment on it, Joe? We're going to go to a quick break in a moment. But
to be fair to Joe, it's not a question that we have discussed.
My initial reaction would be, you're convinced that other people need to pay. And I would say the gospel speaks of and says all of us need to pay. And so if you're unhappy with someone else getting Scott, as in you want someone else to pay, and I think the gospel says, well, if God said, right, you're all going to pay, then actually all of us are in a sinking ship. So I think you've cast a division between people who deserve to be paid, people who don't. And I think the gospel speaks on a very level playing field.
We'll go to a break and we'll come back to you. in a moment, Tom, as well. Fascinating discussion today. Really enjoying the conversation between my two guests, who are good friends and have had many similar discussions, probably not in front of microphones and being broadcast to a large audience, but more like over a coffee shop in Cambridge. But this is what we're doing today, as we talk about my friend, the atheist churchgoer, Joe Ogborne and Thomas Hallam, in studio with me today. Come back again in a short moment's time for the final part of today's programme.
In July 2016, Unbelievable, the conference took place in London, a day for any Christian who struggles to share their faith with others.
I'm Justin Brierley, and I hosted a fantastic day of inspirational sessions with Jay John, Gary Habermas, Beth Grove, and many others.
Now you've got the chance to watch and listen to over 12 hours of this empowering conference,
featuring evangelism, apologetics, and the resurrection.
Get your DVD at premier.org.uk/shop and become a confident evangelist today.
Well, welcome back to part three of today's programme. I'm Justin Brierley, and this is the show that brings you conversations that matter every single week, often between Christians and non-Christians, sometimes between people of different theological stripes. But wherever you are on the faith spectrum, you're welcome. And I hope that you enjoy listening to today's programme. Thousands of people do download the show from week to week, and so we'd love to hear your response wherever you sit on the issues that get debated, on the God question and so on. Many people do that every week, and we'll be hearing some of your suggestions for future editions of the show through 2017 a little bit later on in the programme. We'll be returning to the conversation between Tom and Joe in a moment's time. Just a reminder, if you want to get in touch about anything you hear on the show today, do email in unbelievable@premier.org.uk. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter at UnbelievableJB, the Twitter account, and Facebook.com/UnbelievableJB to follow on Facebook. And of course, we put a lot of stuff up these days on the blog for Premier Christianity Magazine. That's a magazine you will have heard about, I'm sure, if you listen to Unbelievable regularly. I'm the editor of the mag, and can I encourage you to get hold of it in 2017? If you haven't tried out a sample copy of the mag, you can do that by going to premierchristianity.com/freesample. The two gentlemen I'm talking with today on the programme both feature in the January edition of the mag, as you've heard. Joe writing the article, My Friend, the Atheist Church Goer. Lots to come still here on Premier Christian Radio this afternoon between 4 and 5. Again, featuring in the January edition of the magazine, the Reverend Richard Coles talks to Sam Hales about his time as an 80s pop star. He was one half of the hit duo The Communards in the 1980s. I think they had the best-selling single of 1986 with Don't Leave Me This Way. Well, he enjoyed, or didn't enjoy to some extent, quite a riotous life of drugs, partying and alcohol. You'll hear what happened when the fame left and how he came to Christ and his current status as one of the most well-known vicars in the UK, plus some of the controversial aspects of his life as well. He's well-known these days as a broadcaster for the BBC as well. So if you want to hear that fascinating chat between Sam and the Reverend Richard Coles, tune in between 4 and 5 this afternoon for The Profile. Right now, time to get into the final part of today's discussion.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
Well, as we conclude today's programme, I've been talking to Joe Ogborne and Thomas Hallam. Joe's a Christian and for years has attended church with his friend Tom. Nothing unusual about that, you might think, but Tom is actually an atheist. So he's been telling us why he's been going to church with his friend Joe for so long. And we've been finding out about the impact of worshipping next to an atheist on Joe's own life. And we've talked ultimately about the things that stop Tom from believing and some of the struggles Joe himself has had in that area, but why he ultimately has found a place of peace and security in his own faith. If you want to read the great article that Joe's written on this, My Friend, the Atheist Churchgoer, do go to the magazine, Premier Christianity Magazine. It's in our January edition. You can get a free sample copy at premierchristianity.com slash free sample, or just go and read the article up on the website there, premierchristianity.com. Be interested in hearing your views about today's programme. I'll give the ways to get in touch again in a little moment's time, and we'll be hearing some of what you had to say about other shows recently towards the end of today's programme. It's been really lovely having you both in, guys, and being able to talk, you know, so honestly and candidly, you know, as friends about your differences and
we've had a lot of practice.
Exactly, yeah. I feel like I'm just hearing the end results of many, many conversations between you both. But I mean, you know, you're still going to church. Do you see that changing at any point in the future, Tom? Do you think this experiment will finally come to an end if nothing does really change in terms of your core beliefs about God?
I think that's plausible. I think the reasons that I started coming to church was partly to learn about how Christians saw Christianity from their own point of view, rather than how atheists described it, and I certainly got a good feel for that. I've made a lot of friends there, and I certainly enjoy seeing them. I think in recent times at church, I've been more not enjoyed various aspects of the things that I've been disagreeing with. So I don't think it's wholly implausible that one day, but in the near term, I'll still be going.
Have you moved further away, closer to, or not really gone anywhere in terms of your faith, you know, being able to believe in God or whatever when it comes to your experience through the years going to church?
I think in the time that I've been at City Church, it's come as close as it's ever been. Mm-hmm. In the times that I've wanted it to be true, the times that I've tried to get in contact with God and hear what he's had to say. But equally, there have been times of anger, frustration, and silence where I've become more certain that, no, I don't think this is true. And I think at the moment I'm in a moving away period.
Okay. I mean, obviously not something you necessarily want to hear, Joe. You want to see Tom become a Christian, but there's no guarantees on that front, obviously. And I guess you can't deny that he's really tried and put some effort into seeing if this stuff's true.
Not at all. And I think, if nothing else, I commend Tom in that. It's not often you meet someone who's done every available course and done everything you're meant to do. There's a huge emotional part of me, or the human part of me, that, you know, before God, wonders why. And I often say to people, if I have to make a case before God for anyone, it would probably be Tom. You know, it's not like Tom went out of his way to avoid God, as far as I can see. But yes, I think, I mean, by no means will that affect our friendship in the sense of, if Tom stops going to church, it's not, oh, bye-bye. Because Tom hasn't, you know, Tom is a friend. He's not a project, as we said earlier. Yeah. So that will obviously be a different part of our friendship. But I no doubt I'll still kind of have this imaginary atheist friend beside me. And it's been very helpful to actually have that experience, and long may it continue from my end. Yeah. But equally, if it does come to an end, then it's really helped me, I think, recognize how what happens on a Sunday, how it can be perceived differently, and how actually important it can be to try and avoid perhaps sometimes generalizations or making things too simplistic, such that people with very genuine reasons who might be wanting to discover faith but struggle with it, that might create barriers that don't need to be there.
Yeah. I mean, in the process of having Tom in church with you, has it kind of made you aware of things churches could do better in terms of making things more accessible, understandable,
I think,
conceivably possible to non-Christians who attend?
I think a big thing is to try and do as much as you can to understand the people you're mentioning in the sermon. So as much as it pains me every time Richard Dawkins gets mentioned as a token atheist, you know, there are plenty of other atheist thinkers out there who perhaps are better, believe it or not, than Richard Dawkins. And I think, equally, whenever we say these people believe, actually, Tom is, even amongst atheists, there's lots of things Tom believes about morality that lots of other atheists don't hold to.
Sure.
And so...
So we shouldn't paint them all with the same brush, in that sense, as you wouldn't paint all Christians with the same
brush. Very
true. Brush. Yeah.
I'm trying to think of other things that would be useful.
From the horse's mouth, Tom, what do you think might be helpful if someone was tempted to try out church and they didn't believe like you did? What are the things that churches sometimes, I don't know, put in the way of people kind of being able to engage?
My views on what church should do has changed. I think initially I was expecting the sermons to perhaps be a bit more like intro levels, step by step. Okay, guys, you know, this is your course in Christianity. And I think as I've gone along more, I've noticed, at least at the church that me and Joe go to, it's more about helping Christians live according to what they think God's been saying. And so from that point of view, I don't think it would make sense for them to change that. I think certainly as a new person, if you don't know much about the context that they're talking about or the language, I think lots of time there's various words like
fellowship,
grace, salvation, the church, these
Christianese.
They can be used in a particular way. And I think things like if you are interested in going to church, then perhaps something like Alpha can be useful because you can have a space to talk about it, be introduced to some of these concepts, so that when you do go along to church a little more regularly, you'll understand. So I'm not sure that I feel like there's anything particularly in the church that's a barrier that should be changed necessarily.
Okay. Well, that's really interesting to hear. We're coming to the end of our time together. It's been really fun. Thank you very much for coming in. And I hope you continue to find reasons to go along, Tom. But even if you don't, it's been really fun to have you in. And maybe we'll get you back in a few years if the experiment continues and if anything changes. But we'll look forward to hearing more in the future. But thank you very much for both being on the programme today.
Thank you for inviting us along.
Thank you very much.
And again, if you want to read Joe's thoughts on all of this in the latest magazine, again, premierchristianity.com. And we'll be hearing some of your thoughts as well in regard to recent editions of the programme. Do stick around if you can for the remainder of Unbelievable this Saturday afternoon.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Well, as ever, if you want to get in touch about what you heard on today's show, I wonder, it was a bit different, wasn't it, this conversation? You might have some interesting responses and thoughts to it. I wonder if you've been an atheist and have gone along to church to try it out. Perhaps you went for as long as Tom's been going to church, but I'd love to hear from you. And if you're a Christian who knows of an atheist who's been to church, or were an atheist at one time yourself, what were your thoughts and reflections, or indeed anything you want to really send in about today's programme, do email in unbelievable@premier.org.uk. I'd like to hear from you that way. You can also, of course, get in touch via the Facebook and Twitter and follow the show that way as well. All of the details and links to the magazine article, which you can read for yourself at the website of the show, premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. I've been asking you to get in touch with ideas for the new year, and I'll be reading some of those out over coming shows and seeing what we can make happen. I'm going back actually to some various ideas that were emailed to me during the course of 2017. With various suggestions for show topics and people to have on. Here was someone who didn't leave their name, actually, on this particular email, but said, "Hi, Justin, love your show and all the guests that have participated. I've been a listener for over 1 year now, and all I can say is keep up the great work. I want to recommend bringing on Wayne Rossiter, author of In the Shadow of Oz, and Joshua Swamidas from Biologos to your show to discuss a very hot topic dealing with theistic evolution. I think it would be a great discussion to help everyone clarify their position as to God's role in creation. If you need any more details on this, let me know." I did hear Wayne Rossiter actually on, I think it was Greg Kokel's show a little while back, and he did sound like an interesting person to talk to, someone who I think did buy into the sort of believe the theistic evolution version of science and faith, and eventually turned against it. And it would be interesting to kind of debate theistic evolution per se, because it often comes up when we debate scientific issues, though we never necessarily focus down on theistic evolution itself. Thanks for the suggestion. This one is from Betsy, who says, Justin, I have a general comment. I'm a 17-year-old living in Oklahoma. I emailed you last year. I love the show, including almost all of your guests. However, I'm a Catholic, and I've noticed that the show is lacking in Catholic guests. For a Christian denomination, which consists of 1.2 billion people, we're severely underrepresented. The only adequate Catholic debates you've hosted feature Peter D. Williams, who I love, but I must say there are many other Catholic apologists who are fantastic, like Patrick Madrid, Scott Hahn, Tim Staples, who'd be lovely on the show. Perhaps it's time to have some eloquent and orthodox, and this is very important, what I mean is that a gay-affirming Catholic is not a tried-and-true Catholic, for example, some of those against, say, an Anglican, since you have a rather abundant supply over there. I think another Why I Am Not a Catholic show would be great, with someone like Peter Hitchens, who admits that Catholicism is attractive to him. Anyway, just wanted to put my two cents in. Thanks for the show and the great debates. Thank you very much, Betsy. I imagine we will have Catholic guests on in the not-too-distant future. Many people have asked if we could get hold of someone who's often held up as a really key Catholic philosopher these days, and that is Edward Fesser. But I've tried in the past to get hold of Edward, and he just never sort of seems to have the time to be able to come on the show. But Ed, if you're listening, if you know Ed Fesser and you think you'd like to have him on, send him an email. Say, Justin Briley wants you on the show, Ed. But yes, there's plenty of others to choose from, of course. Thank you very much for your email. Here's another one from Rui, who says, I'm writing to you with some suggestions on possible topics you may want to explore in new shows. Huge fan of the show. And there are some issues I keep expecting to emerge, but never seem to do so. Couldn't stop thinking about this. Grew more frustrated, so I decided to email them to you. Hope some of them are accepted. Here they are. Main suggestions: polytheism versus monotheism. This is a fundamental theological issue within a theistic framework, and is very seldom discussed on your show. I have to say, I didn't particularly like your previous pagan guests, as they seem to be just average believers. So I'd like to ask you to please bring on someone more theologically knowledgeable this time. I suggest Edward P. Butler, Ossia Silva, or one of the many good writers from polytheist.com, or perhaps an official representative from a pagan organization such as the Pagan Federation. Please, no one from Pathos Pagan. They're terrible. An interesting angle to take on this subject would be the epistemological differences and similarities between contemporary polytheists and Christians. As an example of similarities, both evangelicals and neo-pagans strongly emphasize the importance of personal experience as evidence for their faith. I think this would be a very interesting discussion, especially if held between two knowledgeable guests. Then other suggestions you have here: Dominionist Christian versus a non-Dominionist Christian. The presence of Ted Cruz in the US presidential run made many people aware of the doctrine of Dominionism and its prevalence in certain parts of the US evangelical movement. Would be very interesting to hear the theological arguments from a Dominionist and the counter arguments of a Christian who believes in democracy. Robert M. Price versus a theistic evolutionist on the theological compatibility of evolution and the Christian faith. Robert Price has recently co-authored a book on the topic titled Evolving Out of Eden: Christian Responses to Evolution, where he and his co-author reached the conclusion that no, the Christian faith cannot be reconciled with evolution. And Dr. Price is a walking encyclopedia, having a lifelong fascination with the Bible and theology. And you give several others, which are with slightly less detail. The Hard Problem of Consciousness, Better Solved by a Christian or Materialistic Worldview. Christian Process Theology versus Orthodox Christianity. Is God purely transcendental or defined also in relation to the world? A neo-Gnostic versus Orthodox Christian, pantheist slash panentheist versus monotheist, and so on. So many good suggestions there, you know, and yes, we should set some of those up. We should. Micah in Oregon, USA, says, I've been enjoying and learning a lot from the excellent discussions on your podcast for a couple of years now. My own theological background has been a typical conservative evangelical one, but over the last 4 years, I've come to have a bit of a revolution in my outlook on the ultimate degree of victory of the gospel, becoming a convinced evangelical universalist. I can't help sometimes thinking during some shows that the answers to skeptics' questions on justice, mercy, atonement, free will, evil, etc., might be more convincing from the perspective of universalism, with the context of a God of love, whose love is truly unfailing and who can and will ultimately achieve his purpose of reconciling all things in heaven and earth to himself through Christ. Would it be possible to have a similar show with a Christian universalist facing a similar grilling or deeper discussions on these kinds of topics with another guest? Thomas Talbot especially comes to mind as a possible guest for this. Thanks again for the excellent podcast. Micah, I'm sure we will get back to the issue of evangelical universalism. Here in the UK, probably the most notable proponent is Robin Parry as well. That might be someone to have on that subject. Often it comes around, obviously, in various discussions, but we could certainly focus on it again. Agnosticism. Now, I didn't say that wrong. I don't mean agnosticism. Ignosticism on Unbelievable, says Pasco, who emailed in a while back and said, I've been listening to the show, and I must say I'm a huge fan. It's really refreshing to hear calm and respectful dialogue between Christians and non-believers. And as a host, you do a fantastic job keeping the discussions calm, friendly and civil. Thank you very much, Pasco. I'm glad you're listening. One topic I'd love to hear discussed is agnosticism. This is the view that in order for the statement God exists to be meaningful, the word God needs to have an intelligible definition. If we can't make any sense of the word God, then the question of God's existence ceases to have any meaning. It's neither true nor false. It's just gobbledygook and rationally should be discarded. Many theologians have attempted to provide coherent definitions of God, from Anselm through to Plantinga and William Lane Craig. But in my view, none of these definitions are intelligible, and therefore the concept of God remains meaningless. I think this is an important topic because it's one that few people seem to be aware of, both religious and atheist. Even Dawkins in The God Delusion completely skipped the definition of God and accepted the Christian definition of the word at the beginning of the book. When I ask religious people, what do you mean by God? It seems to me it's a question that hasn't been considered in much depth, and the answers I receive can be fascinating. I had an interesting exchange on Twitter with Hugh Ross of Reasons to Believe on exactly this topic. As I mentioned in the tweet I sent you, of course, I'd love to come on the show, talk about these ideas myself. Regrettably, I don't have any formal qualifications. I did do a biology degree back in 2000, and since then, I've been working in technology. I'm in the process of writing articles, laying out the main ideas, and we'll be publishing these on a blog soon. Thank you very much, Pasco. And certainly, you don't have to be a published scholar to come on Unbelievable. My guests today, they were not published scholars, but you just have to be able to put your views across in an interesting, engaging way. That's the key thing, really. Here's Joey in Denver, Colorado. As always, thank you for thought-provoking shows. I'm writing today to see if I can politely convince you to host a debate between a representative for Christian Science and one for Protestantism. Christian Science is a bit of a mystery to me, and I often wonder what makes it so different. Now, I'm assuming what you mean here is the sect or branch of Christianity, whatever, called the Christian Science that Mary Baker Eddy founded, as opposed to science that is Christian. But anyway, yes, you say it's a bit of a mystery to me. And one often wonder what makes it so different. There are only a few resources on the internet that compare the two, and those resources are all grossly biased in their respective viewpoints. I'd love to hear a debate comparing and contrasting the religions to get a relatively balanced viewpoint. Yes, we haven't done Christian Science, really, in the past. That's partly been because it's a relatively small denomination, so it doesn't tend to crop up on my radar all that much. Funnily enough, there's actually a Christian Science church directly opposite the church where my wife is a minister, but never really had the opportunity to set up a discussion with someone, but it would be interesting to do that. Certainly if you like, many people would lump Christian Science with Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons as being sort of outside the fold of Orthodox Christianity because of the beliefs that they hold in certain respects. But yes, certainly would be an interesting one to discuss. Here's Andrew, says, long-time listener, first time I've contacted you. I've heard countless debates in my life. I've tuned into so many, it's hard to count. There's a Christian thinker you should have on your show, hopefully multiple times. He's on a par with William Lane Craig as far as his intellect. His name is Blake Gunter. And many atheists respect him here in the US, atheists such as Matt Dillahunty, who's debated Blake a few times now. He'd be great in conversation with people like Ryan Bell or Bart Ehrman or anyone, really. He is ultra logical. Anyway, get Blake on. You won't be disappointed. Andrew, your wish is going to come true. Not too long. We are going to have Blake on, okay? So watch this space. Here's one from Robert Childress. Says, again, this is going back a little way to when you emailed me, Robert. But first off, my wife and I were interested in purchasing a copy of the conference DVD. But as we live in the US, we're wondering if there are any plans for a digital download option in the future. Well, I'm sure you will have heard, if you're a regular listener, Robert, that there is indeed a digital download offer. premier.org.uk/shop. And you'll be able to get hold of the digital download of the Unbelievable Conference. Of course, also the physical DVD and CD version there as well. And I think it's still being bundled with the Unbelievable Conference T-shirt as well. So go and have a look there if you haven't got hold of it yet. But secondly, this is in regard to a recent show. This was when we had Holly Ordway and Vanessa James on the programme. Vanessa James being the ex-Christian who became an atheist, and then kind of had this strange experience, which turned her into a theist again, though she was still on a kind of journey as to whether that will bring her back to Christian faith. Anyway, you said it was a very refreshing show. You were expecting the ex-Christian to be a committed ex-theist, so it was a charming surprise to hear her recount the details of her quite unexpected visionary experience. Vanessa should pull a Blaise Pascal, write down the details of the event, and then sew it into a coat or something. In a way, her description of the experience reminded me of the character Orwell in Lewis's Till We Have Faces, as she catches a momentary glimpse of the castle of the god of the mountain. Such a vision seems quite a blessing, and it's encouraging to hear that she did not immediately discount it. However, as the discussion turned towards matters of mythic parallels of the story of Jesus, I think an important detail was overlooked. Anyone interested in such parallels should do what they can to look up source materials on the matter. The so-called parallels are often great exaggerations or outright misrepresentations of the actual material and rarely, if ever, resemble their Christian counterparts. These myths are only echoes of the Christian story when considered in very broad and abstract terms, in ill-defined appeals to dying and rising gods, and not when considering the actual details within and surrounding the narratives. As Lewis concludes, Yahweh is clearly not a nature god. He does not die and come to life each year as a true corn king should. He may give wine and fertility, but must not be worshipped with bacchanalian or aphrodisiac rites. This is why it isn't the least bit disconcerting that some of these myths predate the Christian narrative. They are not mirrors of the narrative by any means. They are, at best, indications that there are common expectations among diverse cultures given our shared experiences of the seasonal changes of the world. The idea that the Jesus narrative is the true myth is the idea that God, being the universal God and not only a God of a single isolated people group, utilized elements of the common expectations among all of humanity to serve as breadcrumbs through time, leading to the actual historical event of Jesus' resurrection. As to the event described by the early Christians themselves, and as Chesterton pointed out long ago, men used to many mythologies and moralities could make no analysis of the mystery except the curious conjecture that they meant what they said. As always, enjoyed the show. I thought you did a splendid job getting into the midst of the discussion to spur things on, then backing out again to give the guests an opportunity to interact with one another. Well, thank you very much for your kind words about that program. It was a little while ago, but one of my favorite, definitely, of 2016, Vanessa James and Holly Ordway. If you haven't listened to that, go back in the back catalog and have a look at it. I think I did have further chats with Vanessa afterwards and was able to key her in on some of those issues around supposed parallels with other ancient deities, pagan gods, and so on, and that they rarely are as good as they're painted in some online spheres. Anyway, thank you very much. There are others here who want to talk about Old Testament reliability and inerrancy. Let's squeeze this one in. This is from Rob. Rob says, I've looked in your back catalogues for either of the two topics in the subject line, Old Testament reliability and inerrancy. Haven't found any. Perhaps you could try to put together shows in the future on one or both topics. For Old Testament reliability, I don't know who your atheist guest would be, but Timothy Michael Law or Emmanuel Tov might be good guests in defense, then perhaps James White and N.T. Wright for inerrancy. All just suggestions that feed my personal interest. Take or leave as much as you like. Thank you, Rob. I'm sure it will come up in one form or another as the year goes on. Always enjoy your thoughts. So the invitation is still open. If you've got ideas for future shows, topic suggestions, do send them to me, unbelievable@premier.org.uk, and I look forward to hearing from you. Always a joy to meet new people, discover new lines of thinking as well. And this is the show where we make those conversations happen, and we're going to be doing it all through 2017. I hope you can join me for it. It'll be a fun ride. In the meantime, thank you for joining me on this week's edition of the show, and we'll see you next week. The Profile is here next.